Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and happy Leap Year Monday. This is a special show tonight. I am Denise Bowles, and you are here with Black Motherhood Empowerment. And today is Leap Year Monday. It is February 29th, and we won't see this day again for another 4 years until 2020. So I am thrilled to be on tonight to do this show with you and to really talk. Tonight we're going to be hashing it out and really getting raw and real. And I had to get a good friend of mine back on the show with me. And she is phenomenal. She does so many great things. And the last raw and real conversation we had, over 1,200 people listened to that podcast. So I had to bring Venus back. And, you know, I'm just so looking forward to the show tonight. So call-in number is 347-857-2381. I'm Denise Bowles. You're here tonight on Black Motherhood Empowerment, but we're going to be talking about the raw and real. There's a Facebook event page for this event tonight where we'll be taking questions and comments, and the Facebook event page is called Black Woman Raw and Real with Dr. Venus Evans Winter. So if you can jump on Facebook and find that event for tonight, you definitely can put your comments and questions there. We will have Q&A time, and I just want to go ahead and get this show started. The call-in number is 347-857-2381. I'm Denise Bowles, certified birth doula. I'm the host and producer of this show. Venus, thank you so much for coming back on my show. This is great.
As always, thank you, Sister Denise. The platform that you provide for so many young women, girls, and as well as mothers and grandmothers and aunts, those of us who are in the community doing the real work, I just want to say thank you for this platform. We need these alternative outlets as has been proven necessary since the leaving of Melissa Harry Perry. So thank you very much for providing this space.
Yes, yes, absolutely. One day I will be meeting her and we will be able to sit down and have a real chat also, another one of those raw and real conversations. I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, if she was stepping down and doing something else, I definitely would fill in for her in a heartbeat. Most definitely. So anyway, Venus, just tell the audience real quick. I mean, you do so many things. You're now an international traveler as well, but you're also an academia professor. Just tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, my full-time job is to raise two children of African ancestry. I have a teenager, a 16-year-old teenager male child, and I have a 10-year-old girl child. Those are my first priorities. I'm also a full-time professor at a university here in the Midwest. I'm an associate professor of education. I'm also a master's of social work. I am a board-certified professional counselor here in the United States. My work does extend not only here in the local community nationally, but also internationally.
Wonderful, wonderful. And Venus, just tell us a little bit about what you're doing with the White House to empower Black girls. Now, don't forget that. Don't forget.
Yes, as you know, approximately a year ago, I was invited to the White House. The invitation was extended by President Barack Obama's Council of Research on Women and Girls, and I was one of the invitees to discuss the state of research on girls. Also, a lot of my work does center around issues of resilience as well as resistance as it relates to girls of African ancestry here from basically zero to at least 25 across the lifespan. What I do is I look at how Black girls and women are able to adapt to adversity and to resist adversity through agents, their own agency. And so I look at how the family, community, and school supports girls' abilities to not only adapt, but also to bounce back as well as change their local environment.
Awesome. Awesome. I tell you, it's just wonderful, wonderful. And one day we're going to actually meet dynamically, and I'm just going to move into your house and we're just going to have a wonderful time together. And that's all there is to it, you know. So now tonight, Venus, we have a lot to talk about. You know, I'm out here in the birth arena doing this work as a woman of color. I'm seeing a lot of things happening. I'm experiencing a lot of things. I just finished up 13 episodes on this radio station. I produced and hosted 13 episodes of Birthing While Black. Dynamic, powerful stuff that was out here. And, you know, I want to talk tonight about these issues that are just floating out here. We're finishing up Black History Month. Tonight is the last night you and I are together on this show. This is perfect. Now, Venus, what do you think? Let's start at the most current and work our way back, of course, because I think the further back we get, the hotter it's going to become. What do you think about Chris Rock's little, you know, skit there on the Oscars last night? What do you think about that?
I have to admit, I intentionally avoided the Oscars. In fact, I intentionally avoided social media altogether last night while the Oscars. In fact, the hashtag that I decided to use approximately an hour to 2 hours before the Oscars started was, and excuse my language, Ms. Denise, but my language was, fuck the Oscars. The hashtag in protest was, the Oscars is so white. My response, my hashtag was, prisons are so black. Ghettos are so black. Unemployment is so black. And I think that our issues are different. Now, you and I both know that we do need artists. And when I mean artists in radio, artists on television, artists in movies, community artists, painting, you know, that play music, et cetera. We need those artists. However, right now, that's not our fight. Keep in mind that Chris Rock probably was rocking a $1,000 suit last night. So that's not necessarily our issue. Now, from what I did see today on the morning news and the evening news, Chris Rock did address some of the racial segregation that we see on television, especially with the Oscars, right? He made a couple of jokes. He called it the white, I can't remember exact words, but something like the white Academy show or the white a preference show or something to that extent. I can't even remember the exact words. I didn't give it that much attention. So he did bring a sort of politic to it, and I did appreciate the fact that I saw him bring on his daughter's Girl Scout troop. I saw that he made some skits making fun of the Oscars being so white. It's not enough, because what we're celebrating is not only black faces and traditionally white faces, but when we're starting to celebrate programs like the Oscars and the Grammys, my issue becomes with celebrating consumerism and materialism in this culture. And right now, black people don't need access to capitalism or consumerism. So that's not an issue for us, as we saw with our own people killing and meme mugging and mob action over some damn Jordans. So that's not our issue, right? In fact, I'm more afraid of when our kids see people like Chris Rock or other women celebrities in these $2,000 suits or these $10,000, $25,000 gowns, and they don't have access to it. What does that do to the psyche of these young girls and these young boys? That's more of a concern to me.
All right. Well, as I knew that you were going to say bang to this, and, yeah, I said fuck the Oscars, too. I do love to cuss, but now that I meditate on the regular, the cussing has gone down quite a bit. But my take on the Oscars last night, I did not watch, but I did go over to my dear friend YouTube, and I did catch 10 minutes of Chris Rock's skit. Some of it was funny. Some of it was not. I thought he had a dual message for white people as well as black people. And I like the fact that he made the audience very, very agitated and uncomfortable. And here's where I thought, for a lot of naysayers, that there was some brilliance in this act last night. White people can relate to humor. They've been doing it since the Three Stooges, Benny Hill. They relate to humor. Monty Python, that's what they do. So the fact that Chris made a lot of people squirm last night by calling the Creed, the latest Black Rocky film, Sly Stallone almost shit in his pants last night. He was so pissed, but he has to laugh, you know. And he made people squirm when he was saying, yeah, when my grandmother was swinging from the tree, we really didn't care who won the best short documentary. You know, that just, in the 60s, we were fighting other things. We didn't have time to worry about who was invited to the Oscars and who wasn't. So I'm glad he made a lot of people uncomfortable. And that's what we have to do. We have to agitate, because we can't keep glossing over and saying, you know, that's okay, because it's not okay. Here's the message he had for black people last night.
he was like, yeah, you know, the Oscars is not really racist. They're not cross burners. They're not sheet wearing people. Here's what they are. Chris, you made a really good movie, but you know what? You're just not an alpha. Now, when he made the reference to the sororities and fraternities, black life became real for me on that moment, because if there's one obstacle that I do see a lot of, and that is the work that I do out here on my own. I'm on the front line. I'm not affiliated with the church. I'm not married. I'm not part of a sorority. I'm out here doing it. And black people want to put me in a box and say, well, Denise, what sorority are you from? Are you from a sorority? Because if you are, then you'd have more credence. Well, no, that does not validate me. So that was really a strong point for me when Chris did that and when he said that, because blacks tend to do what they've been taught over 400 years of slavery, and we have learned to really put ourselves in compartments and segments and separate us and put us into categories and skin tones and incomes and social stigmas and sneaker levels. We've done all of this very, very well. So I'm glad that he said that last night, because, you know, I am going to continue to jump on the black sororities and fraternities until they step up the game and do what they need to do out here. And I'm not talking about the latest STEP show either. I'm talking about doing the work, seriously doing the work. So that was my whole take on the Oscars. But, yeah, the rest of the Oscars, fuck the Oscars. I could truly care less. I watch a couple of movies on Netflix or whatever I can get my hands on, but like you said, it's a form of entertainment. We need entertainers. We have them. Okay, let's move on.
But I think, too, Denise, you make a very good point about Chris Rock as a comedian and actor, right? He's very clever. And I have to speak to this because I have many friends and mentors who are specialists when it comes to how black people, especially, and people of color like Latinos and Native Americans, express ourselves. Because we have not been allowed into those traditional spaces, such as the Oscars or formal acting schools, the Julian Art School, et cetera, at least not
right.
in mass numbers. It reminds me, I was thinking today, I have a mentor slash colleague slash big sister slash, you know, those sister girl scholars, Dr. Donna Wise Ford. I was thinking about her work today. Chris Rock was brilliant in his role as a race negotiator, as
yes.
a cultural mediator, right?
Yes.
You have to think, at least 2 or 3 weeks ago, he had to negotiate this space between whiteness and white supremacy and black politics, especially the black elite politics, right? Because
yes.
Tyrone doesn't care that the Oscars are so white. And the funny thing is, Dr. Donna Y. Ford, she's a gifted scholar out of Vanderbilt University. She would have
yes.
pointed this out. Somebody like Chris Rock, right, or Tyrone or Jerome, some of the jokes that he was cracking would have gotten him kicked out of the classroom. He would have been sent to detention, suspension, or expelled. So imagine,
yes.
too, the type of resistance that Chris Rock is providing through his discourse, right, on a public stage, national and international stage, and all of that eliteness, right, white and black. He was a cultural mediator and a political negotiator in that space. But as we find out with many of our gifted boys and young black men, like Chris Rock, he would have been ousted. He would have been thrown in prison in any other circumstances. So we need to even talk about that black giftedness, art as protest.
Yes.
And how we negotiate
yes.
these spaces.
Yes, because as you're bringing up, you're making me squirm in my seat right now, and I have to take off some clothes because I'm starting to heat up. But, yes, we are not allowed to verbalize and vocalize our discourse. We are not allowed to express ourselves.
We have to use trickery. So Chris Rock was able to use trickery. And think about how trickery is not respected in many of our institutions, especially our educational system.
That's right. Absolutely not. And you're right. If Chris Rock was in the classroom, he would have been suspended. He would have been expelled. If he was facing law enforcement, he would have been arrested for disorderly conduct. You're absolutely correct. Absolutely correct. But last night, all those white people in their $1,000 tuxes and their multi-thousand-dollar dresses were sitting in their seats squirming And I love the fact that the Oscars panned the cameras out to the audience to gauge the reactions of faces as Chris was speaking. Some were getting it. Others were completely flat-affected. And there were others who were very, very uncomfortable. They didn't know if they should smile, if they should clap, if they should say anything, if they should remain still. So, this was good. This was very, very good. You're absolutely right. Chris had to walk the tightrope, and he did. And a lot of people on Facebook today are calling him a coon and all these other names. But you know what? He stood up there.
But you know what? It reminds me of the book. Sorry to interrupt. It reminds me of Black Warfare, Carruthers, right? Black Power, right? And Black Intellectual Warfare. And I saw this on a morning television show, because again, I did decide to boycott it and not watch it or give my attention to the Oscars, because again, our communities, our ghettos are so black, right? Our prisons are so black. Our courtrooms are so black, right? Our unemployment rates are so black. So we got other issues. But I do want to say that Chris Rock, believe it or not, as a gifted artist, he made a power move that Carruthers talked about, the economic state we're in. Did you notice he used Black Girl Scouts, and majority Black Girl Scouts, and he collected money from the audience? They actually said something to the extent that those Black Girl Scouts collected almost, I believe, and don't misquote me, $64,000 in one night from that audience. You need strategic
nice.
Power, strategic
nice.
Use of your platform.
Good.
Hit them in the pocket.
And that,
so very
and
strategic.
And that's what we need to do, Venus. That's why I'm doing this fundraiser to get to the National Association of Black Social Workers Conference in March in New Orleans, because we need to utilize these platforms not just for our own egos, but for the work that our people need us to do. Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, that was way cool. So, yeah, I'm really glad about that. Now, speaking about another entertainer, speaking about another platform, let's backtrack and pull back a little bit. A couple of weeks before Chris last night, we had the Super Bowl come on, and we had Mrs. Carter come out there in her very nice outfit and her team of girls, and they were in formation. So tell me, Dennis, what do you think about that? How do you feel about Bay's formation?
Please don't make me talk about Bay. I have to think about Queen Bay. Look. You know what? I'm not gonna. I do appreciate Queen Bey's. You know, I appreciate her music, her beats. I appreciate her aesthetics in some cases. But what she said was not political. I was gonna say this, and I'm gonna say it again, over and over again. What we see in that whole information was the commodification of the Black liberation protest of today's youth. She has an entire marketing team behind her. Everything was marketing. You got to think, she marketed the clothing, she marketed the title, because when you actually listen to the song, she's not saying much of shit. In fact, most Black people should be offended, because the only thing that we hear is the internalization of racialization and the idea of white supremacy.
Right.
Listened to that song. I listened to it over and over again. And as I would say, as I've said in social media, Black people and Black protesters, we come in all hues. Matter of fact, formative cultural workers, we come in all hues. We can look at the Black Panthers movement. Some of our greatest leaders were light-skinned, as well as dark-skinned, as well as
very
Asian, as well as Latino, you know?
Exactly.
And so when she talks about country Bama and Creole, really what she's saying is she's a special pedigree.
Right.
I'm not impressed. In fact, she bought into epidemicization and racialization. That song is the example of what happens when you have when you internalize racism. She has internalized racism. And I'm not talking about her aesthetics. I hear younger people saying, or people critiquing her, saying, well, she has on blonde weaves and braids. Well, our people invented the weaves and the braids. Let's keep that real. You can look at any historical archive from Egypt and Nubia, et cetera. We invented that. It's not about the hair. It's the celebration of I'm different from y'all. I'm something special. In fact, if you listen close enough, she talked about the Bama people as if they're lower class or from a different cultural caste system, right, whereas she's saying that her Creole background gives her something special. So actually, the only thing that she's selling is that she's a special pedigree. Now, how is that different from what you just referred to when it comes to our certain religions and our certain fraternities and sororities? But what she did was she distracted our young people. She distracted our youth based off the image. And as we know, Hitler used the same damn tactics in Germany against the Nazis. So let's just keep that real.
Yes, yes. And distraction is the key phrase here. You know, I was very upset with what Beyonce did. And a lot of people were like, oh, you know, this is a movement. And I'm like, no, this is not a movement. This is a moment. This was a moment. This was not a movement. A movement takes strategy. It takes sacrifice. It takes organization. And it does not take you shaking your ass out here to get people's attention. That's not what our ancestors did. Our ancestors did
not
do
it. It's not a movement. Like the Black Lives Matter, Say Her Name, those are movements, right? Well, Beyonce, let's just put it this way. Beyonce is not an Etta James. Beyonce is not Nina Simone. She's at the lowest level of racist consciousness right now. She's at the lowest level.
Yes, yes. So, you know, I just wanted to bring that up because, once again, that is bringing our girls, our Black girls, back into the spotlight of this hypersexualism and what we do and what we're known to do. And I just have a problem with that. Not because I can't dance, because I can't, but I don't think that her activity did anything to enlighten us. It didn't. Not to me. So
I think what she did, again, she used marketing. Her marketing team is probably, she has to put out just a million songs plus in marketing alone. And so I think that her marketing team is brilliant. And her marketing team targeted those of us who are the least conscious. If you tap into some of the most conscious people out there around the world, the most conscious wasn't necessarily impressed with her formation at all. Right, we were entertained. We thought this is great entertainment. I mean, her Twitter game is off the chain, right? If you're looking at the video, the graphics, the color, the dancing, the messaging is great, the subliminal messages. In fact, I can't understand why the people of New Orleans wouldn't be offended. This woman is wearing, again, a $500,000 costume on a car that's going underwater. I mean, so it's problematic. You know, it's problematic. And like I said, we can't even give too much energy to Beyonce because what was done right is that she got a lot of young people who would have not otherwise been awakened. She did introduce them to the fact that we are in the midst of a cultural political movement. Now, but when you look at the message, what is scary about that message, again, Hitler used the same tactics. He used propaganda. Yeah. Right?
Yes.
To use propaganda to basically make the people, other Germans, right, who are anti-Jews, do his dirty work. We also seen that in the United States. When you look at eugenicism in the United States, we also, Hitler, the U.S. government, and U.S. scientists were giving him the tactics on how to oppress and subjugate and basically kill off an entire racial group.
Well, same thing happened with the Middle East. I mean, many of the Middle East dictators and criminals that we are now pursuing, they got their education here in the United States. They mastered in psychology. They mastered in strategic warfare. And then they took that knowledge back to their country and did really bad things with it. So, yeah, we're known for that, too. Oh, my gosh. This is just too hot.
So I think, you know, one of our biggest challenges with yourself, who, you know, you were brave enough to go out on your own and start your own business after you began your social work practice. And you were strong enough, confident enough, and creative enough to have your own radio station. We see other shows that do that. Other people are starting to do this as well. And I don't want to start name dropping, you know. But what we have not been able to figure out, especially people, I believe, who are in my peer group or my generation, we have not been able to figure out how to do exactly what Beyonce is doing, which is creatively sell the revolution. If we can figure that out, if we could figure that out, I think that our young people are ready and willing. As you know, I've been out there. I've been on the front lines with some of our young people. I've taught with our young people at various grade levels inside and outside of schools. What we have not been able to do is bring the message to them in the way that they can revolutionize it. So we are actually failing them. And I don't even know the demographics of your show, but I'm wondering, too, what is the demographics of your show? Because you do have a lot of young people that are tuning in to the mainstream radio stations, but you have another group of young people. We're tired of this BS. We can twerk, but we know that the twerk is not going to free us in these schools. We know that twerking is not going to get us jobs. We know that twerking is not going to help elevate us in our job, right? It's not going to sustain our wealth or bring wealth to us and help us raise our children. What we have not been able to figure out how to do is we haven't been able to figure out how to market the revolution and issues of transformation to our young people. So that's not Beyonce's fault that she figured it out and we haven't. It's our fault as a community. And you know who I'm going to blame. You know who I'm going to blame. I am going to blame the educational system. What do I say every time, Denise, that you give me the mic? What do I say? What's my number one message? Education. We are now, thanks to, I'm going to go political here. Keep in mind that the Reagan administration, Bush 1 administration, and Bill Clinton administration, those were the first people who were operating off of the philosophy and theories of eugenicism, right, which is that you can create a superior race.
Yes.
And
yes,
they bought into that philosophy. They were the first ones to send our young women, our young mothers, off the welfare rolls into work. In other words, they said that you cannot receive government assistance in housing and food unless you leave home and go to work. So we had a lot of young women, right? And many of us, we were born or raised in single-parent homes, but you can best believe our mothers, grandmothers, and aunts and godmothers were at home with us. So what we saw in the late 80s, right, in the early 90s, and here I'm saying this intentionally, under Bill Clinton's administration as well, we saw a lot of young women who were forced to leave their newborn babies, their children, either in sterile daycares or in-home daycares where people were not prepared to raise children and teach them at young ages. And so as I always say, I'm not even talking about the physiology of leaving your baby at the age of 6 weeks. I'm not even talking about that, right? I'm talking about other, conditions that happens when you don't have people prepared to take care of somebody else's child and with limited resources. So what we have is a generation of young people, young women, and young children who basically been socialized and talk about white people, white women from the ages 0 to at least 18 in this country. And they were legally sanctioned and mandated to do so. Now, research shows, as you know, I'm going to pull back from my psychology background. As research shows, white women in the United States have the lowest self-esteem of any other group in this country.
Yes, they do.
But yet we're putting our children in front of them for at least 18 years.
Yes, we are, because the education system is predominantly white. Very true.
And how does that play on the psyche of the young black child?
It really messes it up, and it just corroborates along with the black maternal health, and it puts them definitely on that pipeline for dysfunction. It's a form of job security for so many whites, and it also breaks down the black race completely, yes. Because now, as you're saying, as you're definitely saying, it is now genetically imprinted on our children. Certain behaviors, certain tactics, certain norms now. It's just genetically imprinted. And you're saying, well, how do we reach out to our kids? They've been systematically programmed, unlike us, not to challenge authority. It's a rare moment indeed not to challenge the system. Many of us, our ancestors, you and I included, we went, we got education, and we dared to challenge the system. And one of the things I noticed when I finished my master's in social work, my professors were like, What have you done? You signed a petition saying you want to change the curriculum here because it's not diverse. And I basically turned around to them and said, I'm doing what you taught me. You taught me to question the system. You taught me to examine the system and provide solutions. And that's where a lot of the disconnect now is happening with our children, because we put them, going back to what you said at the very beginning of this conversation, we put them in a materialistic environment. I got to have those Jordans. I got to have that weed. I got to have those rims. I got to have that whip. I got to have this dime piece. I got to have. And it's such a distraction. It's such a distraction that that's where we are. The materialism thing, we're coming right back to that again, because that's where it comes down to. Yeah, we got, as you said, our jails are black, our ghettos are black, our unemployment is black. But just 2 days ago, it was all over Facebook. How many of those same black faces stood on lines that were blocks long because the newest, latest Jordan dropped a couple of days ago?
They were
on that line. Those lines were blocks long, and they were waiting to get those shoes that will not last. My son, for years, collected and sold Jordans. They're not made to last. The rubber on them, the soles of them, you put them in the box, you put them in the refrigerator, they're still going to dry off. They're still going to turn yellow because they're made to make you buy more. They're not made to last. My Converse lasts longer than a pair of Jordans would. So we have to understand that. And I'm saying this because we have to understand, as you just said with Beyonce, we have to understand the marketing. We are marketing souls. We are marketing lives. We are marketing the future generations. We're marketing them. If people can get instant gratification, they know the trauma and drama of black people. It's no lie. We've been traumatized. And if a pie for Thanksgiving can bring that much joy, that sold, what, $2.4 million pies, amount of pies in a weekend, we are traumatized. And we are looking for instant gratification. And that's where we're being targeted. And that's something our ancestors did not do. Our ancestors sat and they stayed quiet. They kept their cards to their chest. They had secret meetings. They kept their shit behind closed doors. They strategized and they waited for the opportunity. Today's blacks want instant gratification and instant assimilation. And they don't want to do the work. Period. That's what
I'm
saying.
And I do think, I think there are a lot of young people out there, and I've had the privilege of sitting alongside these young people and helping, mentor some of these young people, either formally or informally. There are young people out there that are doing the work. They're doing the work. And I've said now for at least a couple of years that social media is the new platform. You know, I listen to Gil Scott-Heron on just in rotation. I mean, that's where I go when I want to write. I listen to his words, you know, I listen to his music. And the thing is, when he stated that the revolution will not be televised, the revolution will not
be
televised.
That's my favorite. I'm going to get that, tattooed on my body somewhere.
Exactly. Well, I would say that the generation that's coming behind me is definitely televising the revolution. Now, I do have to ask, you know, again, what is the revolution? Because something I was being facetious with one of my colleagues, and I won't name who this person is, but I said what we had was with our grandmothers, my grandmother's generation, and probably your parents' generation, we had this idea of we're going to march, right? And I'm not talking, we're going to march and we're going to ask them for access to their institutions, right? Access to their systems, we're going to use their systems to make some type of change. We wanted access. The generation that came after that was basically socialized and enculturated into this belief in working the system in order to have access to these. I believe that generation pretty much was sitting in the right spaces. So they began to rise to the top of becoming CEOs. They began to become directors of different organizations, profit and nonprofit organizations. You know, they did start their own, you know, organizations and businesses. But then there was a generation that's after. And that generation that's after, that's my generation. See, where I think my generation is saying, really, I'm just going to burn this motherfucker up from the inside out. And that's what you're talking about. We're letting everybody know we're coming with the torches. Right? We're going to let y'all know we're going to burn. And it is. It's a certain rage, right? And as we know, it's okay to, the difference between anger and rage is that rage is intentional and you have a plan. Well, anger, okay, as you and I both know as social workers, right, anger is just a symptom of another emotion that you don't want to deal with.
Woo!
So I see a generation that's coming behind us, and I've walked and I've been with these people, and these young people,
yes,
and they have anger. Is it legitimate? It's legitimate. But we have a lot of people that's not nurturing their souls. They're being attacked from every front. They're being attacked by our religious institutions. They're being attacked by our school systems. They're even being attacked by our government. In so many words, Hillary Clinton gave the Black Lives Matter protesters the finger.
Yes.
Trump said, I don't even want to deal with y'all little peasants.
Okay,
right?
There
so
you go.
If we're in our schools, let's be honest to you, Marindy, I need words. Our young people are under my alpha. But this is an entire generation that has been living under the bootstraps of basically class oppression. I mean, generational poverty, right?
Yes.
They're living
yes.
and not having access to jobs or adequate education to prepare them for adequate jobs, right, or a quality of life. You'll be surprised how much time I spend telling people in my own peer group, there's a difference between income and wealth. There's
yes.
a difference between income and wealth. There's a difference between quality of life and just living.
Yes.
Now, I'm going to keep it real with you, Denise, because you know I'm going to do that, right? I have a lot of young Black women that I meet between the ages of 25 and 45. You know what they tell me? They
sure.
tell me basically they having trouble just finding a partner. You know why? Because we wake up every day with a lot of Black men who are only existing not to die.
Right, right, right.
Survival. Could you imagine,
yeah.
yes, existing only not to die. But then
right.
on the opposite end of this, you have a lot of Black women who have formal education. They have their bachelor's. They have their master's. And to some extent, many of us are even going on to doctoral studies or working as CEOs, or working in very high-profile positions. But guess what? They have more debt going out than they have wealth coming in or income
exactly.
coming in. But second, is it really living? Is it living? I was working with a group of families in Chicago, schools in Chicago, Denise. And this is sad because this also goes for New York, you know, these large metropolitan areas.
Mm-hmm.
I would literally watch grandmothers and mothers get on the bus at 6:30 in the morning while it's still dark outside. And guess what? They would take some smaller child to daycare or to preschool, right? Get on the bus,
right.
go to work. They don't get off that bus till 6:30 p.m. at night with that
right.
small child on their hand walking back home. By the time they cook and clean, it's already 8:30. It's time for those kids to go to bed and start their day over. When do they have the opportunity to play with their kids, teach with their
There's
kids,
no,
and
right.
clean
There's
with
no
their
quality.
Kids?
That's right. There's no
the
quality
state
time.
Is
There's
raising
no
our
There's no,
children.
There's no bonding
the state
time.
Is
There's
raising
nothing.
Our, it's not. And the state is raising our children. Is that not a
yes.
concentration camp? Is that not
yes,
slavery? Right now what we have in this in the U.S., we have wage slavery. And many of our children are suffering.
Yes.
They are suffering. But the first thing the economic system does, and a lot of these conservative politicians, as well as conservative Black people, because we can be just as hard on ourselves.
Oh, you
know,
you ain't said nothing but a word on anyone.
We blame the parent. We never blame the government. We never blame the economic structure. And we never blame the schools. We are too afraid.
Yes. And that's inherited.
We are
that's genetic encoding. Yes, yes.
That is enculturation into white supremacy at its finest.
Mm. Now, you know, you brought up a very good point, income versus wealth. Many people are out here punching the clock, and as Steve Harvey, who's not one of my favorite people, but he had a wonderful segment on the Internet here called Jump, and he was like, yeah, a lot of people work every day and they still can't buy nothing because they just have an income. Wealth is land. Wealth is inheritance. Wealth is assets. Wealth is having collateral. All those things many Black people do not have. So wealth, there's a difference between wealth and income. Absolutely. Absolutely. And for us, we attribute, is it making it and having it great is, you know, the type of whip I'm driving, the rims on it, the trip I can take, my address, but nothing of permanence. Right now, I live in upstate New York, and when I drive in the thruway going further north, going all the way up into New York State, this state land on my high, this highway is driving on is mostly owned by the Rockefellers. That is wealth. That is wealth. That is wealth, to own that type, that massive amount of land, the Vanderbilt mansion, the Ford mansion. You know, this type of wealth Black people don't have. We didn't get our 40 acres and the mule, but we were told that if you pull up your bootstrap and work your ass off for 40 years at this job, then you might be something. A Kennedy doesn't have to work that hard because they have wealth.
Exactly. But remember, they also built this political system and this economic structure to keep us, you know, marginalized to the outskirts of it, right, and or completely out of it. So keep that in mind. But what we do have, we may not have access to those formal, again, institutions or access to play within those systems, but what we do have, that's not being acknowledged. And this is why I say some. I have to give shouts out to many scholars of color and some of my. And I mean,
I'm not talking about
the Negro teens. Now, don't get it confused. I'm talking about those scholars of color who are unabashedly every day wake up Black. They wake up Latino, Latina, Native American, and Indigenous. They know we're in a struggle. Okay, so I'm not talking about all of us. Don't get it confused. As well as my community and cultural activists. The one thing that we keep shouting every day, and thank goodness for social media, because a lot of our knowledge has been commodified and or marginalized, right? So thank goodness for shows like yours, right, quite frankly. And I've been telling you, hey, let's keep this up. We got to figure out this momentum. How can we keep these critical voices, you know, a part of this conversation, this public discourse? But let's keep this in mind. Something that many critical scholars of color, and as I will tell you, what do I always say to you? Many times it's the women folk that's willing to put everything on the line, because guess what? We're the ones taking care of the elderly when they get old. We're the ones when that brother get locked up trying to figure out how to come up with that bail money. We're the ones when that young brother get out of jail, we let them move into our house. Let's keep that real. We're the ones that's weeping at the funerals of our young boys and daughters that's being killed at the hands of not only white supremacy, but also Black male patriarchy. So let's keep that real, right? So what I'm saying is that many of those critical scholars, you know what we do have? We don't have that kind of wealth, but we have cultural wealth.
Yes.
Cultural wealth. So our fight is how to figure out how to have our cultural wealth valued, acknowledged, and validated.
Yes.
So that we can have access to a quality of life.
Exactly. Exactly. And that cultural wealth is something that our ancestors, they brought to the table. They were like, well, you know, I can work for you an X number of times. I can do this. And the cultural side of that was they kept their cards close to their chest. They sat in that same room as the white people who were talking stock trade and bond sales, and they kept that information to themselves and memorized what that conversation was going on in that room, because my ancestors and yours were invisible, and they went home and they took their little money together and they went and bought that share of stock. And all of a sudden, shit started happening and our people started amassing some type of wealth. Imagine that. But the cultural side of this is true, and it comes back to the work that I'm doing as a birth doula. This country was built off of the uteruses of the Black woman and her titty breast milk, okay? Both of them. That is the cultural piece that this country will never acknowledge. And, you know, Dr. Ray Watkins is always talking about, reparations. They will never acknowledge reparations, because then they have to acknowledge that the atrocity and the wrongdoing that was done to a group of people by another group of people in this country, they have to acknowledge that. And that would disrupt a whole lot of history and a whole lot of job security. So that cultural piece, we have that, but we need to maintain it, and we need to stop looking to other cultures and what they have and what they're doing and put our culture aside. I refuse to put my culture aside. I refuse to do all that materialism nonsense. I refuse to look Eurocentric. I am Afrocentric. So, yes, I do agree that cultural peace is so very, very important. I just want to take a moment here to tell our listeners this show is being archived, so if you can't listen to all of it now, you can come back. The link will be up. You can listen to it 24/7. Now you see why this last show I did with Venus had over 1,200 listens to it, because this is hot. This is raw and real. The caller number is 347-857-2381. I'm Denise Bowles. If you'd like to speak, please press 1 and raise your hand, and I will be able to bring you on the air. If you have a comment, there's anything you'd like to throw out, we would love to hear from you. Okay? The chat that's going on the Facebook page is also really cool. So that's been doing very, very well. So let's see. I think we have someone here who's raised their hand. Let's see. Okay. Area code 914. Can you hear?
Yes. Yes, I can. Can you hear me?
Yes, 914-482.
Yes, that's me.
Okay, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm LaShawn. This is my first time tuning in to your radio show. I listened to a couple of other shows before and over the weekend, so I'm really loving what I'm hearing. But I wanted to go back to the whole education system. I am an educator by trade. I started my career back in 2000, and I taught for 3 years only. And then after I taught for those 3 years, I got frustrated with the bureaucracy and the red tape of the New York City Department of Education that I made the decision to start working for nonprofit organizations, because I believe in the mission of most grassroots organizations. And I'm in the process myself right now trying to develop an organization dedicated just to single parents to help them with their educational endeavors. However, getting back to, I believe, the sister who was talking before the, Evers, Ms. Evers, when you were talking about the education system and how it's structured to keep our children down, I have a son who's 11 years old and a daughter who is 6 months old. And it was important for me when I made the decision to look for a school for my son. It was important for me that I found a school that would help develop him to learn how to be a black man in this country, and not only that, but to also to build him up. So I was able to find a really great charter school. When we were living in New York City, I was able to find a really great charter school that was specifically geared toward our black and brown children. The teachers were black and brown. They looked like the children themselves. And the administrators were black and brown as well. We live in Delaware now, and I was able to find an all-boy charter school for him to attend that will continue not only that book education, but also help me to build him up to be a strong black man here in America. So I think that when parents realize that the system that this government has set up for our children to go into is not for them, they really have to understand that they're the ones that have the power and the say-so of how their children can be educated. Now, am I advocating for charter school? No, I'm not strongly advocating for charter school. But what I am advocating for is that parents need to understand that they do have the power to decide on how they want their children to be educated. And they do not have to send their children to the public school that's next door just because they're in the same zone. They can look for other schools that will help them raise their black and brown children. And I think that's important because as an educator, when I became an educator, I was not a parent yet, but I realized that I'm with these kids 8 hours out of the day. So I am helping parents raise their children. Now that I am a parent myself, I know that my son is in school for 8 hours out of the day. He's not with me. So his teachers are helping me raise him. And as soon as everybody realized that it takes the entire village, the administrators, the faculty, the teachers, the parents, the grandparents, whoever is a stakeholder in a child's life to help bring this child together and help them not only understand their what was called a cultural wealth, understand their own cultural wealth, then we will have less and less of our children growing up depressed and wanting to commit suicide because they live in a country that doesn't find them worthy enough to be properly educated or worthy enough to be properly protected by the police force. And that's all I wanted to say. But I really enjoy the conversation that's happening tonight. I'm over here. I'll sit here like, yes, and everybody's looking at me like, what in the world is she listening to?
Well, thank you so much. Thank you, LaShawn. Thank you. I do want to comment on that and just let everybody understand. I've written two books, Raising Princes to Be Kings and Raising Princesses to Be Queens, The Single Black Mother's Guide to Raising Her Black Son or Black Daughter. Here's my take on the education system. My son has a master's degree in education. He is a school teacher. He left the actual traditional classroom to do another unique form of teaching because of the bureaucratic nonsense that goes on. This American school system has allowed our black children to be in there for the past 60 years. That has not been a very long time. The American school system was first formulated for white children. It was not made for children of color. So children of color going into school, into this environment, will be faced with hostility because of the foundation that this institution was built on was not built for them, period. Now, when it comes to a black male child, I've seen it happen so many times. They go from being, you know, this really cute little, sweet little child that the teacher holds to her bosom and, oh, Denise, I just want to keep him for the summer. He's adorable. I love your son. And then that black child hits puberty and his voice deepens and he gets taller and now he becomes more like a black male that he is genetically encoded to be. And now he's seen as a perpetrator in this institution. And they have to get rid of this perpetrator. They have to control this perpetrator. Okay? So that's what happens with our children. The other side of the coin, being a parent advocate, a lot of parents leave it up to the schools to raise their children. I am dead set against that. These parents are often working two and three jobs. They are distracted. They are disenfranchised. They themselves have had poor education experiences when they were sitting at the desk as a student. So we have to understand all of these things that happen. And no matter what happens, we still have to empower our parents. Now, for girls, the girls who are going through school, they are having a rough time now, too, because they are losing their identity. They're forced to be nice. Oh, she's so sweet. Oh, she's so quiet. Oh, she really gets along with everyone. And her identity is slowly being stifled. She's being told that she should go to this kind of track of academia. She should forego this. She should do this. She should do that. All of the niceties instead of having her just be a simple individual future black woman, which a lot of times, as we've talked on this show, America just can't embrace that because they don't know how to handle the black woman. They never have been able to. So, you know, the education system has a lot of fallacies. The education system is a lot of job security for a lot of people because it is the black child that is highly suspended, highly assigned to special ed, and highly problematic in many cases where there is no problem. But we're going to make a problem so we can get paid. You know, we have to think about all those things.
And actually, right, and actually the parent is right. I think you referred to her as Rashawn. She's actually correct. First of all, let me tell you now, I do teach educational policy or research educational policy and analyze policy and educational law. And most parents, especially, it's interesting because I don't know what area code she was in or zip code or whatever for that matter, but in certain school districts, especially districts like New York and places in the South, they fought hard, you know, for poor parents and parents of color to have choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, keep in mind, this whole concept of choice in and of itself can be a fallacy. It was adapted, mm-hmm. again, from the corporate world. And as you
right.
all, as we all know, in fact, I write about the McDonaldization of education, which is based off the McDonaldization of society, when we all drive through McDonald's, right, we're given choices, supposedly. The only thing is that the McDonald's family or franchise, whatever you want to call it, actually narrowed down our choices to approximately 10, and they already organized our meals, right? In fact, if you say, well, I want a burger, but I don't want the cheese on it and don't add, you know, mayonnaise or whatever, they get confused because the truth is
exactly.
We don't have choice. And so many families that live in lower and high-density communities or lower-income school communities or majority communities of color, we basically, what we're doing is, just like our politicians, we're choosing between two evils. Do I want this evil for my child, or do I want this evil? Now, you do have some school programs, and I've witnessed them in Georgia. I've witnessed them in Illinois, where you may have Afrocentric schools, or you may have School of the Arts, et cetera. But by the time you get through that lottery system, you exhaust it. You have a million people or 10,000 people trying to get into a school that was only meant to fit 30 more pupils per year.
Exactly.
So it's a fallacy. It's a fallacy, and it's a numbers game. So we really don't have choice. But even in that choice, right, we have the smoking mirrors effect. Because what, okay, let me say this without stepping on toes. What I found is that even in some of those alternative school spaces, you may still have staff or faculty who are not qualified to teach our children, period.
Boom.
So what I try to teach in the back of my mind, now remember, I have two different kids. I have a boy child, an African man child, and I have an African girl child, and one is 16, one is 10. So I get the gamut, right? What
yep.
you have is, I have intentionally, I keep in the back of my mind, keep in mind, I've been socialized also into white supremacy and education. I've been in the formal educational system since I was in Head Start. And I have a bachelor's, a master's, and a PhD at various. So now I know the system, and I know the people that operate in these systems, okay? It wasn't meant to be dismantled, nor was it meant to become ours. Okay?
Right.
So what I'm trying to say is, again, when you're choosing between two evils, really what you're looking for, which is the best quality for my child? As I keep
right.
telling my children, since the time that they can hear and speak and tell their own truth, you're going to school to learn their knowledge. You're not going
right.
to school to learn our knowledge. That's my job. That's
right.
your, my brothers and sisters and my neighbor's job. That's these networks that I have. That's what the libraries are for. That's what people like you who write your own books, that's what that's for. You know. So, no, you're going to school. You're going to learn their knowledge, right? I think of Lisa Delpit, for the parents out there. If you can get Lisa Delpit's book, she has two that I absolutely adore. One is, the first one is called Other People's Children. The second book is titled Multiplication for White People. And basically what she's telling these white teachers is, you have the responsibility as well as the ethical obligation. I'm not mentioning morals, okay? Morals almost do not come into play when you're talking about the United States of America. You cannot talk about morals. We're talking ethics, right, and professional responsibility. These white teachers or middle-class teachers have the responsibility to teach our children, and I'm using our broadly, our children, the skills and knowledges that they need in order to survive in this particular cultural context. It's my job, or, you know, the economy, the larger economy, it's my job to teach them our knowledge as well as to hand over a pass on our cultural wealth. And we can teach our children that intentionally. I think we all posted on Facebook the young black girl who said, I can't find books that look like me with characters that look
right.
like me.
Therefore, yes.
Right. She said, I'm going to collect 1,000 books. That's where you start. That's where you start.
Yes.
So that's first and foremost, right? So just think about, you're choosing between the best of, I don't want to say two evils, because I wouldn't be who or where I'm at if it wasn't for the formal educational system, but I also would not be who or where I'm at if it wasn't for knowledge and talents and dispositions that I was given, right, or was transferred to me outside of these formal institutions. So that's one. The second thing is, and I meet a lot of young women when I'm speaking and when I'm teaching. I met a young woman at a community college. This young woman told me she's going to nursing school. Now, Denise, as you know, as a doula and an MSW, right now what we have in this country, we have a push to recruit girls of color into the nursing field, in particular young Latina, Hispanic, and African-American women, right?
Yes.
And the reason is because research shows that those group of girls are underrepresented in the health field. So from an objective standpoint, not being aware or conscious, we think, oh, my God, that's great. They want us to go into the nursing field, the healthy field, where we can make a lot of money. I meet a lot of young girls, brown and black girls, who said, I'm going to become a nurse. They make good money. I'm going to go to school. You know, I'm going to work my 12 hours a day, and I'm going to be making like $70,000, $80,000. Well, let me tell you something, Denise, and the listeners. When you look at these trends, and these recruitments started about 10 years ago, they were recruiting our girls right out of high school, in some cases middle school, right? And then they'll major in it or specialize it in high school, then they'll go to community college. Well, research shows that majority of our girls, one, they're not completing these programs, and when they do not become RNs or MSNs. They actually become CNAs.
Or LPNs.
So technically what the government has done in cahoots with corporate America is basically they have solidified for our girls of color basically to go into professions where the only thing you're going to be doing is wiping the ass of some old white woman. And you know why that is? It's because research shows that the Latino population, the African-American population, within now the next, 10, 15 years, is actually going to outnumber the white population. The white population is getting older. Communities of color, especially the Latino racial group or ethnic group, and black people, we're actually younger. So really what they're doing is they're preparing our young black women to basically one day, or not just young women, also young men, to one day take care of the elderly, the white elderly population. And I say all of that to say is that the educational system, it is not set up to meet our community needs, set up to meet their community needs, white people community needs, the white middle class needs. And so what we need to figure out is how can we offer our children an education as well as a curriculum and a form of pedagogy where they are basically preparing to meet our community, cultural, and political needs. That's what we need to be doing, right? And so as I told this young woman, she said, well, Dr. V, I hate to say this, but I'm pregnant again. And this is a young woman. Now she's going to have three children under the age of 20. Well, she's 20, less than 20. I don't want to give out all her information. She's not even going to be 20 with three young children. You know what I told her to do, Denise? I said, you know what? Since you got young babies in the house under the age of 5 and your government is forcing you to go work, why don't you go to school to become a daycare provider or an early childhood educator? That way, until your children are old enough, you can take care of them and you can help take care of our other children in the community, in the neighborhood. And then
you
when you're ready to become a nurse, good, go become a nurse. But what's happening is these counselors, and everybody, teachers, we're in their ear, and we're saying, hey, we want you to become what we need you to become. Myself, too. Denise, I spend majority of my time, right? I have so many degrees and letters behind my name, but every day I'm basically preparing somebody else's children to take care of our children. Is that not problematic?
Mm-hmm. Sure. There you
That's problematic.
And that is very, very true. A couple years ago, Venus, you were on the show with me. We did a show on a famous book, a study that was done following two black boys in an elite white school in New York City called, and the book was called America's Promise. And if you want to listen to that show, you can find it here on Blog Talk Radio under Denise Bowles. And that show was very powerful because in looking at the research that was done, these two black boys that were in a very elite white school still had problems because the staff was not culturally competent, the parents was not adequately prepared for the reality of what their boys were going to face, even though they went to an all-white elite prep school in New York City. And these two young boys had to grow up and understand that, yeah, I went to this school, and that doesn't mean shit out here because at the end of the day, the world sees me as a black man. Period. Doesn't matter if it's Yale, doesn't matter if it's Harvard, doesn't matter if it's any of these other prep schools, it doesn't matter about any of that. So we have to really
understand. As you know, Denise, the producers of that show, you know, because I told you in confidence, the producers of that show asked me to moderate the show while it was airing in social media. And that was, approximately a year and a half to 2 years ago. And I did moderate it, and we had great discussions around it. And I think you and I both were uncomfortable because we thought this was going to be great. This is about black boys who are high achievers.
I was so hyped.
We thought they had access to a very, you know, high-quality curriculum and teachers. But as you and I are watching it, as formerly trained social workers, we can see in their disposition that they were not happy. In fact, they had lower self-esteem. They were accused of having disabilities such as or attention deficit disorders, right?
Right.
They couldn't find a date. One boy said he went through the entire school without even being kissed by a girl. And as I told you, I said, well, this is a problem. I said, this is a problem. I said, because research shows there's a strong correlation between, one, self-esteem and academic performance. But what a lot of parents, especially me as a parent of a teenager, research also shows that your dating life or the development of your sexuality is also tied to your academics and cognitive function.
Absolutely.
So what did this event present to our boys? And so something I don't know if I told you, I didn't tell you this, Denise. So what happened after that show, considering that I myself do have a son, an African man child who is a high achiever, academically inclined, I started to do my own research. And I've been researching, you know, obviously education for a long time, and I do look at black girls and their high academic performance or resilience. But this led me to look at boys. And what I would say, and I don't want to name drop, but there are some people who are professionals in this area. Again, I would say look at Dr. Ford's work, Dr. Margarita Bianco. You can look at Dr. Joy Lawson. They are like the gurus of this. But something that we very rarely talk about, how do we meet the cultural needs as well as the social emotional needs of our high achieving students in these very segregated white supremacist middle class spaces? It's a conversation.
Right. And that's what I really want to talk about with America Promise back then when we looked at the documentary.
Isn't that what the
right?
That's what the call-inner, that's what she was hinting at. I'm doing everything. My child is doing everything. We're trying. We're working. But now what do we do to preserve their humanity?
Right. And what we have to understand, if anybody can have a chance to watch this documentary, it's called America's Promise. It's all over. It's on PBS. You can get it for free. But these two young boys, when they started in this very elite white prep school in New York City as four-year-olds, they were adorable. The teachers thought they were cute. They were like pets. Oh, he was like a little chick. Oh, he's so cute. And then as our black and brown boys start to mature and grow and go through puberty, that's when the problem starts. And I write about that in my book, and it's called, you know, Puberty versus Perpetrator. And that's what happens with our boys when they go into the school system. When they're little, when they're cute, they're in pre-K, oh, my God, they're adorable. And I saw it with my own son. My son went through Montessori. He went through the public school system also. But when he was little, he was adorable. Once he hit puberty, a lot of teachers who were white thought he was a perp. They thought he was a perpetrator. And God forbid that my son came to school with a gold bracelet on his arm. They thought he was selling drugs. He can't wear jewelry and be black because you must be selling drugs. So what we have to understand here is that not only are blacks genetically encoded with this epigenetic inheritance and the traumas of racism, but white people are just as encoded on racism. I don't care how much they deny it. I don't care how much they say, oh, not me, that's my answer. That is part of genetic encoding. All right, but I have to say it. But Michael Porter writes a really great book series. He's a wonderful therapist in the South. He's a black man, and he writes a really good book, Kill Them Before They Grow, What Happens to Black Boys in the Education System. He also writes a wonderful book about how black women in this country have been devalued and slandered and torn down by the very system that relied on them to help build this country. So it's just really, really powerful. Venus, we have to take one more call. She's had her hand up for a really long time, and I don't want to ignore her. But I do have to ask her, could you please make your statement or your question short, because we have a very short time left on the show here. Area code 615-818, are you there? Hello? 615-818.
I'm here. This is Donna Ford. I'm sorry for being late.
Hi, Donna. You had your hand raised for a while, and I just wanted to pull you on the air because you've been so patient. If you have a brief statement or question, we'd love to hear it.
Yeah, I will be brief. So thank you both. One, I wanted to say that I am just thrilled to hear one of the very few interviews where we could just be real. You two have been informative, rational, and passionate. Too infrequently, when you put passion with being rational, people don't take us seriously. So you two have me pepped up even more than I am. Relatedly, I'm just glad to hear the F-bomb drop not once but several times, because we need to be angry and we need not apologize for it. Let's
exactly.
be angry, let's be indignant, and let's do what needs to be done and say what needs to be done to move on and to have a revolution. And then I love Dr. V's comment about the Negro pens as well, because sometimes we people of color can be our own worst enemy. But I don't want to deflect from the racism that's out there. And then just last two things, I love that you two have given attention to gifted students. As I've written about, at least 250,000 black students each year have been denied access to gifted programs. And if
that's
you look
right.
at Chris Rock, thank goodness he made it. But others who share some of his characteristics who look like us, meaning who are black, will be in jail, not hosting the Oscar, to say the least,
exactly.
no less be a millionaire. And then lastly, and Dr. V has done this and written about it extensively, thank goodness we are giving attention to our females. We have lost attention when it comes to black males being the extensive focus, and they should be. But when we talk about blacks, don't forget about us as females. And then as black females. And then when we hear about white women and feminism, and again, this is Dr. V's work, you know, their story does not tell our story. So we cannot be lost as we focus on black males relative to black females, and our story cannot be lost and denied or trivialized as we talk about sexism and what's going on with whites or white females in particular. So I'm just elated to have heard this show. I can't wait to share it, and we need to be able to just be ourselves, be scholars, and be real, and use terminology that shows our passion, and our anger, and our righteous indignation. So we need a
revolution.
All right,
well, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Donna. Thank you. I'm so grateful for your call.
Thank you.
I just want to say that the show is being archived. You can listen to it 24/7. I've had the dream and always had the approach of being able to be raw and real, the same way the Greek scholars used to sit around and just talk and share ideas and concepts with passion and with verbiage that they felt. And they were allowed
actually,
to do that.
Exactly, Denise, and that brings me to a point. So if I can just piggyback off of what Dr. Donna Ford said and also what you're saying as far as the Greeks, before the Greeks, there was the Africans. Timbuktu was the first, cultural and scientific space, and it was created by our people, right, the indigenous Africans, right? And so I do want to say that. So everything the Greeks have stolen and Socrates has stolen has actually come from Timbuktu and people like Plato to all the way to Freud. You know, I'm not going to say because they stole it, yes, but it's also cultural, it's fluid. But that brings, it's all this is related to what Dr. Ford is saying, and she's a very, direct, but she's also very, she's non-egocentric, let's put it that way. She's very humble, she shows a lot of humility. One thing that I would say, and this may be a bold step, you know, no pun intended. But this might be a bold step to say, especially publicly. But President Barack Obama said that the civil rights issue of our time would be access to education, in particular higher education. I want to go a step further because something that I've even been reluctant to talk about, and I've been writing and researching on this for at least 15 years, education as it relates to students who are doing what they're supposed to do. Historically, educators and researchers, sociologists and educators, have always focused on deficiency and pathology when it comes to students of color, especially with African Americans. And then there was this wave, this push in the 70s and 80s to basically push back against, you know, stories of deficiency and pathology or so-called science, right? But it was their narrative. It wasn't our narrative. So many scholars of color jumped on board and said, wait a minute now, this is not all bad. I mean, it's a lot of us who are doing, let's expose the scientific racism in higher education and in education and science. And so then what happened, that was in the 70s, right? And even before then, we can go way back before then with Du Bois or whatever and Garvey, but I'm just saying in recent history. And so then what happened was in the 80s and 90s, you began to have this focus on all the great stuff we were doing with very little focus on, I'm not going to say the great stuff we were doing, with a focus on how special education was created, right? It was socially constructed. How segregation in schools is racial, you know, it's the separation. But what we're at a phase where we want to highlight everything that's good about black people, you know, who can play the violin, who is great at shooting a 3-point basket, to who's the world's greatest artist. And so what I try to do in my work is bring this balance, is that, oh, let's look at black girls. Black girls, we have our baggage. We have our shit, and we're still doing well in schools. But I think what has not been done, and this is what I believe Dr. Ford is hinting at, I'm going to go a step further and say the civil rights issue of our time is making sure that our children have access to a high quality instruction, high quality curriculum, advanced placement courses, IB courses, and gifted education. And I'm saying that to all our listeners, especially our parents and our teachers and social workers, because we also screen for special education and or gifted education.
And I just want to throw in real quickly, Venus, I just want to throw in real quickly, you also want to have access to a nutritional meal during that school day.
That's true. But I want to make a point about this stuff with AP and advanced placement, gifted, and STEM. Mm-hmm. Research shows, and we are in the midst of a knowledge economy. We are in the midst of a knowledge economy as well as the post-industrial. It has already been predicted in economics, political science, and sociology that those citizens that have access to a high-quality education, in particular STEM fields, AP, and gifted education, those will become the wealth class of the future. And I don't mean 50 years from now. We're talking about 10, 15, and 20 years from now. So if my daughter is 10, we're talking about what's going to happen to her or her quality of life when she's 25 and 30. So I do believe, and again, I'm going out on a limb here because somebody can counter me and say, oh, my God, this is about the bourgeoisie. This is not about the bourgeoisie. Again, we discovered science, math, astronomy, and astrology.
Yes, this is not anything new
to our people. It's been co-opted and it's been stolen from us, and we have not been connected to that scientific, historical knowledge and technology. So let's keep that in mind. But I am going to go on a limb here and be very bold on Denise's show today and say the civil rights issue of today is access to high-quality curriculum, high-quality instruction, STEM, AP, and gifted courses.
Yes, and I do agree with you, Venus, because, you know, back in the day when the great, great, great library in Alexandria caught fire, most of what we brought to the table as Africans burnt up and was destroyed because it was taken from us. So, yes, I do agree with you 100% on that. And I want to talk about that for a minute. We have 10 minutes left of the show, believe it or not, listeners. Time does go fast when things are this good. I want to wrap this up by saying to all of you as a birth worker, as a certified doula, as a Black woman out here holding it down with my own business and dealing with so many white obstruction and oppressive people, access is the revolutionary word. Access to quality birth workers, access to Black women who are the health leaders, who are midwives, who are certified nurses. We don't have enough Black women in this arena to serve and to support our upcoming Black families. Access to education, access to nutrition, access to wealth and opportunity, which is something Chris Rock talked about last night. He said, hey, we don't want a handout. We just want the same access to the good roles that the white people get. So the key word for this revolution that will not be televised is access. So I say this to all of you tonight here with Venus because she has my back as always. I feel that if you can hold the door open for another person, be the access. If you can write a blog or an article that's going to be publicized, that people can read and get them incited the way I'm doing with my blog talk show, do it. If you can go to a convention and present on the topic to incite people and bring about access like I'm doing with the National Association of Black Social Workers, I'm going there. I proposed to them 5 times before I got accepted, 5 separate times, and I'm going there in March to talk about Black maternal health. That is another form of access. We have to continue this wave of access. What are you doing, listeners, to promote access? Are you writing? Are you having programs? Are you in a think tank? Are you promoting? Are you holding that door open for another one of us to come through? What are we doing for access? So accessibility is the key word for this revolution. That's what I believe. That's what I see. And that's one of the sprout words of our president who made the word audacious. And that's why I named my blog The Audacious Black Woman. Now we have to be the access people. We have to be the people who are making it happen. And that's where this is so important. So, yes, Venus, I agree. Access to good, solid education, because Bill Gates and all these other techno people have showed us that if you have a good education, the same kid who made Facebook, look at what the hell you can do. That's incredible. So access to strong, solid opportunity, unbiased education, yes, yes, and yes. Access to good, strong, unbiased maternal health for our Black women and our brown women, yes, yes, and yes. Access, ladies, access, listeners, if you can get out there and present and write and galvanize and promote access, that's how the wave of this revolution is going to grow and move forward. So, Venus, we have 7 minutes left. I want you to wrap it up, but I just can't thank you enough. I can't thank our listeners enough. This has just been a wonderful show. The time has gone by so fast. Venus, what do you have to say as a wrap-up here for our listeners?
I know that we touched on many topics, right? The arts, ideas of revolutions and, you know, youth movements and what's the next phase as far as education for our people and for transformation, liberation. One thing that I think that I'm going to hold you to, because I know your listeners already, I want to move to a discussion on the social, emotional health of our young girls, of our girls and young women. So
okay.
I'm hoping one day in the future you'll invite me back. I think this is the space. I think it is the platform. I brought it up when I spoke at TC, at Columbia University, for the Still We Rise conference. But we have not had a safe space to talk about the social, emotional health of our girls and young women. And I think this is the space. This is the platform. Because we need to have honest conversations, and we need to have conversations about revolutionary love and what that looks like. I think we've been afraid to air our dirty laundry, and I think sometimes we get so stuck on fighting white supremacy, patriarchy, capitalism, that we fail to have a girls-only talk. Okay. And saying, what do we need to heal in order to move forward and raise our young people, you know, to become better spiritually speaking.
Okay. I can do that. We can definitely do that. I can produce and host the show. We can do a couple of shows and make a series out of it, and develop a nice catchphrase to get people engaged. But I'm ready to go. I'm ready to do it. So yes, Venus, off the air, let's put our heads together and bring it forward, because I'm with you. Absolutely.
Great. And I'll, as always, I want to say thank you for having me on the show. I believe this is my third time speaking with you and your audience. And as always, I feel like I'm at home. You know, it's almost like if it was just me and you and a nice, you know, glass of wine or Crown Royal, you know.
And some cranberry juice,
Right, and cranberry juice, you know. We bring all
can't thank you and Venus. You know, I follow you, I stalk you on Facebook, and I just see all the work that you do and the pictures you post. And, you know, you are not afraid. You are brave. You are brazen. You are out there, and you're doing it, and you're flying, and you're taking so many of us with you on this flight, and I love it, and it's so important because it impacts generations, and this is what we're doing. We're out here doing the work, and that's what our ancestors wanted, and I know they are proud. So I do this show because I really love the work. I love my people, and I'm called to do it. I can't ignore it. I simply cannot just sit here and go through life and not live. And when I do this, I live. So I just want to thank everyone for being on the show and listening. Please share this link. It is for free. I don't charge. I pay Blog Talk Radio every time to go ahead and do these shows out of my own pocket, because I think they're so very important. I've been hosting and producing these shows now since 2009, and I have over 100,000 listens. And for a one-woman show, that's not so bad, but there's more work to be done. So please, if you have a chance to go on Facebook to the event page, I am doing a fundraiser right now to get me to the National Association of Black Social Workers conference, where I am presenting on Black maternal health disparities. This is something that impacts generations. I am doing a fundraiser. I just have another $1,000 to go to get to my goal, and I need your help. So if you could please go to GoFundMe and look up Denise Bowles, and you will see it. It's also on my Facebook page. So please, if you can contribute, I would really appreciate it. These shows come up as often as I can get my special guests. My special guests are always professionals. We're not here pontificating and bitching. We actually have something constructive and actually very critical to bring forth. So I'm really glad to be able to do that. I'll be working on some more shows with Venus, and I'll be working on another show for Black Maternal Health to talk about mental health when it comes to Black women and maternal health, which I think is also very important. And I just want to thank everyone again. These shows are real. They're raw. We need to have these open conversations. We need to exchange this dialogue and this passion and compassion to get people agitated enough. You know, Venus brought up some really great points here tonight. I'm going to have to go back and listen and write these down. You know, there's a difference between anger. There's a difference between rage. There's a difference between wealth. There's a difference between income. There's so many things that were said here tonight, so I have to go back and listen to this again and start typing and blogging and doing some more blogs for the Audacious Black Woman and really getting in excited about everything as well. So this was a great way to wrap up Black History Month. I just want to thank everyone for joining us and being here on the show. You can like me on Facebook. You can like me here on Blog Talk Radio, so you'll get the first scoop whenever I put up a show. You'll be the first to know. Once again, Dr. Venus Winters-Evers, thank you so much. Love you to death.
Thank you. It's been a joy, as always. My pleasure.
Oh, yeah. So thank you, everyone, for listening and back. It's been an honor and a pleasure to do these shows, and I look forward to doing more. There will be some more coming up in production as I can get volunteers and beg and plead and do these shows along with my work. So it is a passion and a pleasure that I enjoy. So thank you all for being on the show tonight. The show is archived. You can listen to it for free as many times as you'd like. And I'm Denise Bowles. You're here with Black Motherhood Empowerment. I am a certified birth doula. I have my own business called Bold Doula, www.bolddoula.com. I'm also the author of Raising Princes and Princesses to Be Kings and Queens. You can find that book for sale on Amazon. Thank you all so much. Have a wonderful night.